Well, good morning, everyone. It is a date certain. The combat operations in Iraq are over on August 31st, 2010. There was a date certain for the start of the war, but this feels like an anticlimax to me.
It really does. It does feel like you're going out with a whimper.
Well, and we're not necessarily going out. There's still 50,000 troops in there. What is their mission? What has been accomplished? Certainly no president can say mission accomplished anymore.
Ever again.
But people all over the world are asking the question, what is accomplished? What are the lessons from 7.5 years in Iraq? We're certainly asking you that question. Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE. But Noah Feldman joins us now, professor at Harvard Law School. He's a former senior advisor to the Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq. Noah, good morning.
Good morning.
So what is your model for how this has come to, I think it's fair to say, an unsatisfying, if deliberate, end?
As you said a moment ago, I'm not sure it's come to an end at all. 50,000 troops is still an enormous number of U.S. troops. And although we're not calling them combat troops any longer, the truth is that soldiers on the ground remain armed. They remain in charge to some realistic degree of a lot of security in Iraq. And although they're meant to leave roughly a year from now, the reality is that an elected Iraqi government may well ask for some of them to stay. And under those circumstances, there's going to be a lot of pressure on President Obama to agree.
To agree for them to stay.
Exactly. The problem would be that if they do withdraw and Iraq's security situation deteriorates, we could be back where we were 2.5 or 3 years ago, before the surge. We could be back, in other words, in the middle of the Civil War, and President Obama, or any president really, would be very concerned about that happening. It's not in U.S. interests or in Iraqi interests for the country to fall back into that sort of a difficult or even disastrous situation. And so, again, it depends on whether the Iraqi government, once it's actually formed, asks for continued U.S. troop presence. But if they do, I think we're in for a longer commitment than just a year.
But you have described that the model here is the Korean conflict back in the 1950s.
It's not a perfect model, but after the Korean War, which ended in 1953 when President Eisenhower was elected, the president realized that although he didn't want to continue involvement in Korea, the U.S. had little choice but to leave a significant number of troops behind. And in fact, we still have, remarkably enough, 50-odd years later, almost 60 years later, we still have 30,000 U.S. troops in Korea. And for the first 35 years or so, Korea was a dictatorship, and the United States participated in keeping that dictatorship going. We didn't do this for the benefit of the Korean people. But eventually, Korea had economic growth, and then it had political development, and it became a democracy. And today, it's a functioning democracy.
Well, you know, in that way, the Korean model is heartening, but there are other ways in which it's really scary. A, the Korean War never officially ended. And B, to a certain extent, the Korean War is largely forgotten by the American people.
Well, I think those are both really good points. The not officially ended sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah.
This current war, you know, has no official end point. We know the only thing we know for sure about President Obama's speech is that he will not use the words, as you said, mission accomplished. So there won't be a clear ending to the war as long as there are people in people in Iraq who remain angry about the way things have turned out in the post-Saddam era. So that's, I think, quite similar.
I love that slip, Noah, I have to say.
Yeah.
It's just really irresistible and kind of chilling. I mean, to go from Paul Wolfowitz saying that the war would be costed out by receipts from Iraqi oil revenues to essentially modeling it after a 60-plus year commitment in the demilitarized zone in Korea is a huge mission creep. I mean, mission creep doesn't even begin to describe the evolution of what we're doing in Iraq.
I think that's completely right, and it depends on the proposition that a non-democratic country without a very strong democratic tradition, or really very much of one, could be transformed into a democracy. Cultural transformation, which is what we're talking about, takes decades, not weeks, not months, and not even just a few years. And in Iraq, we have seen some progress. There is actually there have been a series of elections in Iraq. They're not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. There is a constitution, and it more or less, emphasis on the less, functions in Iraq. Again, not a bad accomplishment, but we're talking about something that will take significant periods of time and can only occur if there's real stability in the country. And so the old you broke it, you bought it formulation that people associate with Colin Powell it's truer than anyone imagined at the time. We actually did break it, and so far we actually have bought it.
I want to play for you this comment from Paul Bremer, who was speaking on the BBC's The World at One.
Our security agreement calls for the withdrawal of all American forces by the end of next year. But the agreement also provides that the two countries can undertake strategic deliberations about defending Iraq against internal and external threats. I think the American government should begin soon quiet discussions with the Iraqis about how, after next year, we can continue to support Iraq as it moves along the difficult road to an open democratic society.
Paul Bremer, of course, was the former head of the Coalition Provisional Authority, for whom you were once an advisor. And I'm wondering, does this fit into your South Korea model? Is this a language which would allow the United States to remain in Iraq indefinitely?
The short answer is yes. It does allow that. But there's a big, I think, and meaningful difference here between Iraq and Korea. And that is, in Korea, we essentially were dealing with a puppet government that we had set up. And we, quote-unquote, negotiated a, quote-unquote, treaty with them. But really, we said, look, we're leaving troops behind. You have no choice. That will not be the case in Iraq, and that shows you how the world has changed in 60 years. The situation where the U.S. and Iraq will negotiate the presence of U.S. troops for longer really depends on the Iraqi elected political leadership saying openly that they want to do it. And it's probably a mistake for the U.S. to seem to be initiating these conversations. They have to really start on the Iraqi side. Now, one of the tricky bits about democracy is you need an actual elected government to talk
right,
to.
Right, right, right.
They have elections, but they don't have a government.
And Noah, I have to ask you, as an advisor to Paul Bremer, I mean, during your advice, did you ever say to him, hey, Paul, Korea's a great model here? I mean, he's speaking in such orderly terms about what is essentially a chaotic situation which he, in part, helped to create.
Well, I never called him Ambassador Bremer, Paul.
Right.
But the truth is that there were those of us all along in Iraq who were concerned that the creation of democracy would be a very long-term project and that all the talk about doing things quickly and cheaply was not not necessarily realistic.
And on October 31st, that is exactly the point we are at. I mean, I guess I told you so is not an appropriate statement here, right, Noah?
Never is.
Never
gets you anywhere in life.
But Noah Feldman said it all, a professor at Harvard Law School, former senior advisor to the Coalition Provision Authority in Iraq, like everyone else in the world, noting the end of combat operations in Iraq on this day, August 31st, 2010. Thanks, Noah. Coming up, a view from the Iraqi civilian side.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.